For many of my athletes, the conversation has begun, who do you want to be on April 1, 2021? We all have different priorities, we have different goals, and so it's an individual exercise. Who do I want to be April 1, 2021? How strong do I want to be? How fit do I want to be? How connected do I want to be to the fitness I need for my events or adventures or expeditions this summer or later in the year? Having a clear, defined outlook, perspective, vision of who I want to be allows you then to go back and do the programming and the training and have a clear mind and perspective of how you want to get through these difficult next 8 to 10 to 12 weeks. This is the time of year where motivation is the hardest. And so having a clear, defined path and outlook on who we want to be allows us to sort of take a managed approach towards that. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Weekly Word Podcast, a podcast looking to inspire health and fitness by bringing out the endurance athlete within all of us. I'm Chris Hout, AIM coach, and this is episode 152. There is an endurance athlete within all of us, what we are hardwired to be, deep down, our primal selves, how we used to survive, and therefore also how we used to thrive. I wish to help you discover this endurance athlete within, or more of it, through daily training that not only challenges you physically, but also mentally. This means spending time with your thoughts and hearing what your inner voice has to share. Discovering the endurance athlete within can be a transformative experience for you as an athlete and therefore as a person. It can actually change the trajectory of your life and relationships. It has for many of my athletes over the years. The Weekly Word Podcast is an addendum to this. Advice, observations, and tips to support human development that comes along with athletic development. That's effectively my job as a coach and what I try to convey on this podcast. Your human and athletic development played out in the athletic arena, but overlaying into our daily lives. Well, it's that time of year. The days are getting quite short. Daylight savings time is here. Or is it daylight savings time is gone? I always get those two confused. And most of my athletes have moved indoors. Many of you have moved indoors. In talking to David earlier this week, he was surprised to hear how much strength I want the athletes doing. As I mentioned, predominantly strength with some sport-specific movements sprinkled in. Movement, not training. This isn't for adaptation or absorption or growth. It's for staying connected to the sport-specific movements I'm looking to have them do. A little bit of cycling, a little bit of swimming, a little bit of running, but predominantly strength. For many of my athletes, I have them on a full break from the sports that they predominantly do, just strength. So what is the focus at this time of year? Well, through that predominantly heavy, weighted strength work, we're looking to build relative strength for power generation, durability, and overall longevity in your respective endurance activity. It's going to be a long year in 2021. We're excited for events. We're excited for adventures. There's promise on what 2021 will bring, and surely the summer, if not the second half of the year. Many of the events are filled up because of 2020 holdovers. And so we want to be ready, strong, to have a long, powerful, durable, healthy, injury-free season. The goal is also to build the eccentric strength and strength endurance in your legs to prepare you for that long season, for the eccentric loading, which occurs when running downhill or descending on long trail runs. We want to build lactate tolerance and recovery in your legs so that you can train harder, longer, and recover quicker. We want to continue, as always, to build your core and midsection, overall strength and stability during training, and increase overall durability. We want to build your glute med strength, hamstring strength, landing mechanics to help protect your knees from injury. We want to build the legs and lungs and reduce the impact on your joints. And overall, we just want to build durability and functional movement that teaches your body how to move effectively to reduce the chance of injury and increase strength. That teaches your body to move effectively also when fatigued. So given this, many of you might wonder what to look for in strength programming if you're doing it on yourself. Yeah, you are technically doing it on yourself, or if you're doing strength programming yourself, not on yourself, in what to look for in a strength coach or trainer. These are my opinions, of course, and many a great strength coach has taught me over the years. As many of you know, it has taken me a long time to properly embrace strength. But about 8 years ago, it's probably closer to 10 years ago, I felt it. And I felt it because I properly did it. I embraced it. I immediately saw the effects of a properly executed strength program on my racing season, on my durability, on my health, and also my daily mindset towards the training. I felt stronger, more powerful, more connected to what I was doing. And it lasted quite long, given that I wasn't doing strength work anymore. I had done it for a long off season. Then it's taken me quite a few years to find it. The plan, the philosophy I like to apply. And again, to be clear here, it's surely not my own. With the help of many a strength coach, especially the one I worked with when coaching a bunch of North Face Mountain athletes, as many of my athletes know. That program that was developed then from a strength and durability and conditioning aspect for those athletes, not by me, but by somebody else, has been very meaningful to me because I learned so much from that coach, Rob. Rob taught me a ton, and I appreciate his work and his wisdom and his wide range of knowledge. And it's sprinkled and predominantly heavy in a lot of my coaching strength for endurance athletes now. So here are a few things I recommend when looking for a strength coach or when you're looking at strength programming. Many might be wondering, well, what's the difference? What are we trying to differentiate here? We want to make sure that we're doing the movements and the strength and the program properly. So many athletes, and I don't blame them, hire a strength coach to work with them once, twice, sometimes three or four times a week. What I often recommend to my athletes is have a strength coach at least once a week or a trainer that you pay, that you're accountable to, and he or she is accountable to you, but then go out and execute the training, the strength, the prescription, the program a few more times a week on your own if that's what it's designed to do. You don't necessarily need somebody with you all the time, but that depends on your personality and what you know you need in order to successfully execute the plan. That being said, if you have a strength coach or looking for a strength coach once a week or a trainer at the gym to help you to ensure that you're doing clean movements, that you have the right approach, and to help you design the plan. What I often have seen is that athletes will show up with a strength plan that they found or researched online, and it doesn't align with me or the strength coach or the trainer that they're working with because it's either too advanced or the concepts don't properly work for said athlete. That's not the RX, the prescription this athlete would need. So it's a nuanced little game, as I call it, of determining what you need, why you need it, and how you will execute it. Here are some things to look for. The programming is quite important, but it shouldn't be complicated, complex, with a bunch of jargon. It should be simple. Solid programming is the most important component on any strength plan or with any strength coach. It's not a question of which exercise. It's not a question of what equipment. It's not a question of what kind of technique. It's about the programming. I value a strength coach that has done the programming that's being implemented themselves. Having done the programming themselves means they understand it and are personally connected to it. It's important for me in all my coaching that I've done the plan itself. I've done them all. All my programming that I have prescribed to athletes, I have done in some shape or form myself. The programming should be simple and progressive, which means it builds upon itself. If your trainer or strength coach is making it up every day and doing random training sessions, find someone else. Don't fall for buzzwords like muscle confusion or a coach that uses terms such as, I just want to keep the body guessing and therefore puts together a plan on the fly. There's nothing random about good, effective, progressive coaching plans. Whether you're looking to do endurance, a team sport, trail running, even Olympic weightlifting or tactical military work, all effective programming is planned, thought through, and progressed. Even in the CrossFit world, where the background and the history of it was more random, now things are a lot more programmed, progressive, thought through, built upon each other, and they know how each component fits into the next training cycle or in the current training cycle. My athletes are either naturally curious or want to know in what we're trying to do and how today's training session is part of that, how it fits into the bigger picture. There is not a week that goes by where some of my athletes, or one of my athletes at least, emails me or texts me or calls me or sees me and asks, how does this movement fit into my cycling limiters or my cycling strengths? How does this movement tie into my swimming? How does this movement or this exercise tie into my running? Why am I doing some strength work and then a bunch of endurance work all in the same session? It should fit together nicely, and I, as the coach and the person who wrote the plan or who chose to put the plan together like that, should have a clear answer on why, not just because. The other thing I would look for if I'm starting a strength plan or working with a strength coach is ones that have a variety of experience and knowledge in the area that you're looking to improve in. Do they have experience in trail running? Do they have experience in Ironman triathlon? Do they have experience in multi-day stage events? Do they have experience across multiple sports, military, tactical missions? Do they have experience designing their own training programs and strength programs? So there's an appreciation there by you, the athlete, to whom you're working with. They understand and have felt the sport you're doing. They felt the soreness. They felt the disappointment of not being able to run downhill after 20, 30 miles because your quads have given out and they don't have the eccentric strength to do what you need to do. They felt the lower back getting tight from a long climb on the bike. They felt the shoulder weakness in our swim stroke when we're 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 miles into a swim. That's all important in order to fix the little things that we're looking to get stronger at. Even though I've gone through the programming myself and I've worked with coaches with way more programming experience than I have, I still find mistakes. How do I find them? I do my own programming and I experience, meaning I go through the strength programming myself and experience firsthand what I messed up at so I can fix it before I prescribe it for my athletes. One of the most obvious things about a coach, a strength coach or a trainer, or even your coach that you're working with currently for your endurance activities, that they don't do their own programming is that there's a discrepancy between what they're writing for time or fatigue points and what is actually happening in the gym. I've come across this quite frequently, whether military athletes or new to endurance athletes. Seeing some of their programming with their strength or trainer, strength coach or trainer, it was obvious that the coach wasn't doing his own programming. I look at the prescription of the day, the workouts that they're doing that day, and they should be doing it in 60 minutes, but it's been prescribed to take only 45, or more blatantly, they think that the athlete can do it in 60 minutes and it takes them an hour and 45 minutes to do all those rounds or to do all those exercises or to do all those repeats. Well, that's a pretty easy way to recognize that they haven't done it themselves. Also, the suggested weights and the suggested movements, you know if they've done it themselves. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of my programming and a lot of my prescription for my athletes has weight suggestions attached. That's where I'm feeling and observing and thinking, this is what they should progress to. This is what I'd like them to achieve eventually with this exercise, with this movement in weight down the road. Doesn't mean they can do it right off the bat like that. I surely can't. A lot of the strength that I put in myself for myself, I'm just under most of the time as well. I just can't get that right off the bat. It takes me a few weeks, if not a few months, to settle into the strength that I'm fully adapted to. So look for a strength coach, a trainer that not only has written their own programming, but has gone through it themselves. They don't have to do all of it themselves, but they can put the programming together that is relatable to you as well as executable by you. Another thing I recommend when looking for a trainer or a strength coach is what ties into how I coach as well. An effective coach will push you past your comfort level, will not put up with any BS, complaining, whining, anything that will hold you back from being accountable for your training. Yes, as many of my athletes know, this isn't about high fives, it's about getting the work done. It's hard to have an effective coaching relationship if the relationship is overly casual. Goofing around at the gym, goofing around at the track, goofing around on swim deck too much. We are all limited in our time, and this is about getting the work done. This, of course, is not surprising to many people familiar with me. I'm personally pretty stern and all about business when it comes to training. It drives Emily nuts. We go on a bike ride, I don't talk. I'm training. This isn't about hanging out. I'm training. If I'm out there on my bike, if I'm out there running, if I'm in the pool swimming, I'm training. This is focused, deliberate, intentional time. I'm clear on what I want to do and what is expected of this workout. And I found in coaching, and I look for this in strength coaches and trainers for my athletes as well, that clarity works best. And on a side note, which is important as well, coaching, how I coach, is not about merely trading for the outcome. I'm not here to tell you you can do it, and you, the athlete, using that guarantee in why you will therefore do the work. You shouldn't need me to tell you that you can do it or get it done or that you will be successful to even try to start your journey. Your journey should be about gaining confidence that you could possibly do it. That's what endurance athletics is about. It's a slight fear. It's on the outer edge of what you deem possible. You should have questions if you can achieve it. It keeps the sense of urgency alive in this. A strength coach, any coach, heck, me as a coach, we guide you. We don't tell you a path and how it's guaranteed. We guide you. One thing that drives me nuts about looking at strength programming, as well as what some trainers do, is that there's all kinds of fancy, big jargon words exercise. Simple, direct, specific programming should be supported by simple, direct, specific exercises. The longer I coach, the smaller my exercise menu, for lack of a better term, has become. Most see this in my coaching for swim, bike, run, and such. Early on, I used to be concerned about keeping my athletes interested or to wow them with a variety of different exercises or training or sport-specific simulations, many of which were quite honestly silly in looking back. If anything, that has only led to confusion, made the workouts harder to execute, and as I've been saying for years, you getting out and doing it, keeping it simple but effective so that you can successfully executed is so important in this. Again, we all went pro in something other than what we're doing. We want to be able to go out, execute the training, and be done. Know that we did it right, we did it effectively, that we're progressing. And the fancier the workout is, the more complicated and wordy the workout is, the more difficult it is to execute properly, progress, feel good about it. If you have questions, if you did it right after having sacrificed your time in doing it, we don't want that. We want simple, effective, done. Move on with my day. I'm back to family. I'm back to work. Over the years, I've identified training and exercises that are simple, easy for me to teach and coach, and easy for my athletes to learn. Once they know it, they can execute it independently of me. And part of why I was saying work with a strength coach or a trainer maybe once a week. If it's simple, you can do it on your own. This is more about form and technique that he corrects or she corrects, and then doing it effectively, simply on your own. I've done this coaching thing long enough to finally learn that what matters to athletes is not how fancy or exotic and fun the training session is, but how well the training transfers to outside performance. This is all I care about, and this is all they should care about. And that's what I found. They do only care about that. I spoke to an athlete just the other day. He ran rim to rim to rim. And while he was doing his prep for it, the amount of step-ups he was doing was frustrating him. But he trusted me. I told him, you will be surprised how effective these step-ups, thousands of them, 800 here, 1,000 there, 600 there, will help you at rim to rim to rim. And sure enough, as soon as he started running uphill at rim to rim to rim and come around a corner, and what would he see? 150, 200, 300 steps. That's why we did step-ups. In order to prepare you for that, that's different than running uphill. It's different than hiking uphill. Steps, truly steps. So step-ups were incredibly effective in his strength programming and his overall fitness for what he needed to transfer to outside performance. That whole component is the fancier and more complicated the exercises or the training plan, be wary. And that ties into fancier, more complicated, flashy toys, computers, gimmicks, different equipment needs. We don't need that. Most training sessions deploy a mixture of a few key exercises and movements and require very limited equipment. If you keep it simple, effective, you can find this in any gym, in most cases, even these days, in most hotel gyms. And that's what I want. Again, limited training time. Many of you pre-COVID, post-COVID, travel or in different places. We don't want to interrupt our training plan because of that. So, or home gym, because we're not going to the gym ever again. Most of my coaching and strength coaching in general, coaching meaning my coaching outdoors, coaching on the bike, pool, run, etc., revolves around that. Not a lot of gadgets, more about being effectively able to execute the training. So for my athletes doing strength at this time of year, especially in a COVID winter, it's about keeping it simple. Things they can do at home or at a simple gym or hopefully have accumulated over the last few months in order to now properly do. Barbells, maybe a couple of plates, some racks to deal with those barbells or plates or bar, some dumbbells or kettlebells. That's basically it. The rest is like sandbags, which can be made at home, plyo boxes, which can be made at home, step-up benches, which can be made at home. I have athletes, and myself included, I use our kitchen chairs for step-ups. They're just high enough. Sure, I have to put the kettlebell or the barbell on those chairs in order for them to not move during, let's say, hamstring hell or poor man's hamstring curl, right? Because the chair will move. So there's some creative ways to work around it, but we can do that. I love weight vests. They're good for rucking. They're good for adding weight to the weights you might not have at home to your body. It changes the leverage of your body, how your body works, and it can be adjusted. Instead of a sandbag, which you might have a sandbox too, which you probably raided all the sand out of in order to make sandbags, I lighten up my weight vest and use it for Turkish get-ups. I use it for different exercises. Pull-up bar is one of them too. Pull-up bars have been hard to come by in COVID, and people have built their own. Whether it's going to Home Depot and buying a good shelf rod, things like that. Climbing ropes work well, or just a good solid TRX. Many of my athletes have been using a TRX system to do some ring work in and unstable arm work and tricep work. But again, all things that can be built on your own. I think the only thing that we really need to work on is a bar, some kettlebells, some plates, and some dumbbells. And the kettlebells / dumbbells are replaceable with each other. So if you have a good set of dumbbells, you can do most kettlebell work. And if you have a good set of kettlebells, you can do most dumbbell work. Throw in there maybe a backpack, which can be made at home too. You have a backpack, you fill it with stuff. Some of my athletes that were getting ready for some big mountain adventures this past summer, I had them doing loaded climbs up the mountain with a bunch of water in it. As you're at the top of the mountain, you drink the water before you run down. I don't want you running down loaded. An easy way to combine two things that you need. Loaded up, drink the water, or pour it out, but at least you have water at the top. Run back down light. Of course, important when thinking about any type of training, indoors, outdoors, gym, home gym, whatever you're doing it or how you're doing it, we want to keep an eye on clean movements, good sound technique versus just adding more weight, good sound technique versus just going harder, faster, good sound technique versus just running stronger. No, we would want everything to be done technique first and then adding load. But also, we want to be careful to avoid injury, and we want a trainer or a strength coach that's willing to sacrifice your progression in order to focus on technique and good movements. If they're just looking to get you stronger so that you feel good about you getting stronger and seeing more weight on the bar or seeing more barbells being lifted, instead of good sound technique, this should be a warning sign to you. I'm constantly in the gym currently because I'm also on a break of any type of activity and focused primarily and exclusively on strength. And yeah, it's frustrating. It's embarrassing on how little weight I'm putting on the bars. But I'd rather do it technically sound. My bench press is pretty embarrassing compared to some of the guys in the gym. I like to justify it to myself that I've got really, really long arms from swimming, and therefore the distance I'm raising that weight is more than others. No, it's embarrassing either way. But I'm not willing to compromise more weight by throwing my back into a bad arch in order to get that bar up, or for it to be partially crooked, or for the repetitions to not be clean and sound and in control. I know I'm doing it right when I'm sore that evening or the next day, but nothing is damaged. Safety, smarts, good technique is always something important when looking for a trainer or a strength coach. That they're willing to sacrifice you staying injury-free and doing good, technically sound movements instead of just seeing a quick strength gain. As many of my athletes know, one of the many things that my athletes have seen in me that have been around me, whether at training camps or training or in general, is I don't treat anybody differently. You can be a world-class athlete. You could be a world famous athlete, you could be a high powered CEO, or you could be a complete newbie. I don't care. It's about you and your performance and your desired outcomes and your growth and the endurance athlete within you that you're looking for or looking to have shine even more. That's what we're trying to do. And so it doesn't matter to me where you're from or experience you have or who you are. And that's part of what you should also be looking for in a strength coach or a trainer in general. How are they treating their other athletes? Are they treating other athletes differently? Special? Do they baby you? Do they baby others? It should be pretty consistent. Transactional, a business relationship. You came to me for a desired outcome. I will execute that. And if along the way, Chris, a coach, can also have you grow as a person and develop you as a human, that is amazing. And our relationship as coach and athlete can only flourish more if we're open for that. But that depends, again, on the athlete and what they're looking to get from it. And that's clearly communicated in our relationship and desired outcomes early on. But a coach that treats people differently or special or babies them, no. They make all their athletes clean up or take good care of their equipment or treat themselves with respect, not the trainer themselves, but the athlete, that they encourage the athlete to respect themselves, respect the work that they're doing, respect the time they're sacrificing, respect the time in general. They're not late, the trainer. They don't tolerate you being late. Just certain values that, again, keep this focused, keep it professional, keep it businesslike, keep it progressing, keep it serious, keep it going towards the desired outcome we're looking for. Especially whining or complaining. Nothing will kill mindset and a training atmosphere like whining athletes around me as the coach, or around other athletes, or around other athletes that are not even part of our training plan or group. No good coach or trainer should or will tolerate it, even if it means not working with that athlete ever anymore. Many of my current athletes know I don't put up with that. I've fired athletes just for that. Fired. I've let athletes go just for that. Everyone is there to do the work and do that work hard. Whining, complaining, negative attitude, negative mindset needs to be called out immediately. Now, there's a difference between whining, negative attitude, and criticism, constructive criticism. I'm definitely open to suggestions that my athletes have and working those things in, but there's a difference between complaining and constructive criticism. Now, if they're right, I'll reconsider the training, change it accordingly, and actually thank them for bringing it up. But again, there's a difference between whining, complaining, negative attitude versus, you know, I'd love to discuss with you how this works for me, how I feel it, and therefore how I'm progressing from it or not progressing from it. Or I've tried this in the past and these are the results I've seen, and therefore I'm wondering why we're doing this. How do you see this integrating into my cycling skills in June? All those components are important. But that wasn't whining, that wasn't complaining, that wasn't a negative attitude. That was constructive feedback. Those are inputs I as a coach need to hear. Actually makes me proud when the athlete talks like that, because that means they're thinking, they're engaged, they're embracing the program and trying to figure out how this works best for them and are willing to work with me, in tandem with me, to get it done right. And finally, what I feel is quite important when trying to figure out your strength coach or your strength trainer or your strength programming for yourself, is that I've learned over the years that not everything lasts forever with regards to what exercises work, what progression works, what type of movements are best for specific sports. Those things change over time too. And continuously being open to learning and to observing and to applying new concepts and new movements and incorporating new ideas into a plan is quite important. And if there's something that I feel works really well for this athlete, because they've taught me and given me the feedback that this makes me feel the strongest or has had the most profound effect on me, on my cycling or running or my swimming or my hiking or my climbing or my rucking or my abilities in other ways, then I'm glad to add that in and see how it works. The fun part actually has become over the years to try it myself, to implement it myself a few times and see how I feel doing it. And from there, growing and progressing. All training plans, all programming is dynamic. It's never stagnant. And if you find a coach or a strength coach or a trainer that insists on a certain plan and there's no dynamic growth to it, or it's the same as it was 5 years ago, if they hand you a sheet that you can tell was written or designed many years ago and it's just the same thing, plug in name here, I'd be wary. All right, so that's what I would say at this time of year as you're doing your strength training, as you're looking for your programming and what to work with and who to talk to, maybe at the gym or contacts you have. It becomes important to keep those factors in mind. We're about to go into 2021, as I was alluding to, mostly through November, heading into the holidays. And for many of my athletes, the conversation has begun, who do you want to be on April 1, 2021? It seems to be an interesting date in general, as we're starting to see some of this information come out regarding vaccines and COVID, that in April, we'll have a much better understanding and maybe some distributed vaccines already within our population. It's also the time of year when things move back to outside, where we're hopefully enjoying the fresh air on our cycling, running, swimming, hiking, daily training. That means we're really kicking out of the holidays, we're kicking out of winter, and who do we want to be there? Who do I want to be on April 1, 2021? We all have different priorities, we have different goals, we have different ways we currently are managing our way through this bizarre 2020 winter. And so it's an individual exercise. Who do I want to be April 1, 2021? How strong do I want to be? How fit do I want to be? How connected do I want to be to the fitness I need for my events or adventures or expeditions this summer or later in the year? Having a clear, defined outlook, perspective, vision of who I want to be allows you then to go back and do the programming and the training and have a clear mind and perspective of how you want to get through these difficult next 8 to 10 to 12 weeks with the holidays, with COVID, with the weather and the time of year and being indoors. This is the time of year where motivation is the hardest. And so having a clear, defined path and outlook on who we want to be allows us to sort of take a managed approach towards that. If you miss a day of training, will it affect April 1, 2021? Probably not. But we also want to have a clear, successful, accountable path towards that. I urge many of you to take a look at it in from this angle. Who do I want to be April 1st, 2021. That's a clear demarcation line. How will that launch me into the season? How fit do I want to be? I don't need to be perfectly fit, but how fit do I want to be April 1, 2021? And that also allows you to think about the strength programming. How strong do I want to be then versus how fit do I want to be in my respective sports? Take all that and combine that into my next few months of mindset. Okay, I want to dive into an email here that I just received in the last few days, which is timely and fits the theme of indoor training, strength training, alternative training, and so forth as we close out this Weekly Word podcast. Hi, Chris. Enjoy the podcast and gained a lot of insights since I started listening 2 years ago. Thank you for being an open resource and sharing your wisdom. I don't know if it's wisdom as much as it is experience. It's been many years of doing a variety of these sports, of taking on different adventures, of being a complete newbie at times, as well as being the most experienced person there, but continuing to take in what others are observing, feeling, learning, growing, applying, and how they're excelling in their own way. Remember, for me, it's also quite important and meaningful to observe an athlete that does have a busy career, that does have a big family, that does have community obligations, that does spend his time or her time busy on weekends giving back to others, whether community or church or family and so forth, yet they still find the time and care for that leg of the stool that means their endurance self, their athlete self, their self-care leg of the stool. And that's a special skill that requires a lot more planning and attention to detail and intention in general than it is for somebody who has all the time in the world, who wakes up in the morning and that is his job or her job to just train or take care of their body or grow their endurance or become stronger or to prep for next set event. So the spectrum of learning versus wisdom has kept me going for many years now. And I totally appreciate that. That's part of why I love this. I love having grown over the years from coaching into now health and fitness of bringing out the endurance athlete within. This theme will come up a lot over the next few months and hopefully years as it evolves and grows into a new theme of a better version of ourselves that contributes, that is more in tune, that is more connected with nature, that is more part of the collective and part of its greater, better, positive, growing outcome. That is everything that I think endurance athletes really come to understand and grow into. I sure did. Sorry, got backtracked there, or sidetracked there. I started doing stretch cord workouts during the COVID quarantine last spring. I got great benefit getting some basic stroke conditioning until I was able to open water swim. Being in Northeast Ohio, we usually begin open water swimming in mid to late May. Spent the summer and early fall exclusively swimming open water until water temps and daylight brought things to an end. Currently back in the pool. I'm currently using stretch cords one day a week as a supplement to my pool swims. I find my stroke rate is much faster with stretch cords, even when I focus on going slower. Should my stretch cord rate match my pool rate? Very good question, and one I've never come across, so I really appreciate it. So first of all, supplementing with stretch cords while you're pool swimming is phenomenal. It's a great way for sports-specific strength, really focused movements, and staying connected to the power through the channel that we need for swimming. I would also highly recommend different resistances of stretch cords because they have a different stimulus and therefore again will turn your stroke rate into different speeds. It might go up for easier cords, yellow maybe. It might be steady and just familiar at green, and at red for a stretch cord you might be going quite slow. So something to mix in, just like you have different strength sets in a gym session, and just like you use paddles and have different turnovers while you're swimming, I hope, or you're doing a higher stroke count versus a lower stroke count, just as you do different type of leg turnover work running or at the track, you want to do similar with your stretch cord workouts. That being said, stroke count is higher because you don't have to time your strokes as similarly as in the pool. What that means is you can't make your one arm go faster in the pool or slower than what your other arm is doing and how your body is rotating. So your rotation of your torso and of your hips and your breath rate, meaning each side or opposite sides, those are all in synchronicity. They move in a timing mechanism with your swimming. most of the time, you don't need to do that when you're on a pool deck or somewhere doing stretch cords. You can breathe whenever you want to breathe, and you can independently move your arms as fast as you want. You can go single arms faster or slower. You can do double arms faster or slower. They're not dependent on your stroke movement through water and the channel, and therefore the rhythm of side to side. When we're swimming, especially when we wear a snorkel, we can feel it even more. With a snorkel, we don't have to move our head from side to side to breathe. We can just look at one point in the water, whether it's the black line or the side of the black line, if you're swimming in a circle with other lane mates, you'll notice how much your shoulders actually rotate while your head stays still on an axis. And that rotation is what your stroke rate is. You can't get it that much faster without moving the other arm in sync. And so that's why stroke rate is often off in a pool versus a stretch cord. They should not match unless you're looking to really create the same output, same tempo, same rhythm. I wouldn't see or couldn't think off the top of my head why that would be advantageous. So I would focus on good, clean technique and form while doing stretch cords. I would focus on mixing things up. But I would also notice how your shoulders are rotating there if you're doing single arm catch up type of pulls, whereby one arm is moving in sync with the other arm recovering and so forth. Similarly, in the pool, you want to make sure that you're noticing how it is possible or not possible to speed up one arm while the other arm is still in the catch or pull phase of the stroke. And you'll notice how much more in sync your freestyle stroke is than you actually previously thought. I hope that answers the question and helps, but that was a very good thought and question, and I appreciate it. That being said, that'll be it for this week on the Weekly Word Podcast. It is the latter half of November, heading into Thanksgiving, and I wish all of you a healthy, fit, joyous Thanksgiving, whether you are able to do it with family, or you're spending it at home due to COVID reasons or any other reason. Thanksgiving is still a great time to reflect and think about the fitness and the health and the gratitude we should have for that, how we train and our consistency and the things we care for in taking care of ourselves. That's part of this. We often think about Thanksgiving, about other people and what they mean in our lives, and that's very important as well. But take some time this Thanksgiving and thank your body, thank your mind, thank your spirit, thank it for being there for you, especially this last year in COVID, and that it has delivered, hopefully, in some cases, I know plenty of my athletes that don't say the same thing, hopefully it has delivered for you this year. For most of us, we put it through a lot as endurance athletes. We ask it to deliver a lot, be there consistently on a daily basis, and we always blame it on our mind or our mental approach to our body if we're not performing or if we're not in a good mood because of the training. We want to also consider that the body delivers for us consistently, flipping that narrative, flipping that perspective, and realizing what a special organism it is and how it works and how it allows itself to be trained, how it allows itself to get stronger, to learn independently of the mind of what to do and how to do it subconsciously. It's quite an amazing process. And again, take a moment this week, thank it, appreciate it, and then we'll kick through the holidays even stronger, better, smarter, fitter. Stay healthy, stay safe, stay fit, stay connected, and I will speak to you the first week of December.